Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It is the Anfield Wrap. It is a season review show. Neil Atkinson here, joined by Neil Jones, Harriet Pryor, Ian Ryan, Ash O'Rourke doing the video producing, Andy Heaton doing the audio producing, and Meg the dog playing with my headphone leads. Meg is in today. Hello there. Very nice to see you indeed. May well come through on the video. We are going to be going through people's season reviews. Ian will go first, then Neil, and then Harriet. But before then, we were going to do some transfer state of play stuff at the end of the show. But the McAllister thing seems like it's happening this week, Neil Jones. It feels like he was Liverpool's top priority. He was the one they wanted to get done ASAP. He's the one who maybe they feel as though they can build the other bits around as they're trying to work the rest of the strategy, but he is the one that is happening.
Yeah, it looks like it. It looks like it'll be the first of a big summer through the door. And it looks like the one of all the players that have been linked with Liverpool, and there's been many, 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 but he looks like the one who makes the most obvious difference to the starting 11. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of players, I think, who potentially make a difference and potentially make a difference to the squad. But I think you see straight away where he fits in really to it, whether it's in a 4-3-3 or whether it's in the system we saw at the back end of the season with this sort of 3-box-3, if you want to call it that. It seems to be quite common, cool at the moment. But I think you can plug him into that quite immediately. You know he's Premier League ready. You know he's a bit of a winner, quite a significant winner, to be perfectly honest. Yep. He's won the biggest of the lot. And I think he looks like he's made of the right sort of stuff as well, character-wise. You know, you look at the fact that he takes pressure penalties, the fact that he plays in pressure games, the fact that he can, you know, he can make an impact on a Messi-led team is pretty encouraging as well. So I think it's a very good start, albeit just the start for Liverpool.
It's just a start, Harriet. The thing that he looks to me like is a footballer that makes other footballers better. And it's no coincidence, not just him, but it took this specific generation of Argentinian players, for instance, that managed to help them coalesce into a footballing outfit that could, in the end, genuinely challenge for the World Cup, along with, obviously, the best player ever to play the game. That always helps. But he does look to me like a footballer who, as Neil says, is multifunctional. He allows Liverpool to be flexible. And I think flexibility has been something that's been missing.
Yeah, I think you kind of see both sides of his games. He is a facilitator, but he's also a playmaker. So I think the facilitating side of his game means that he can be really effective as the first piece of the jigsaw puzzle. And you can think about now how you're going to support him, how you're going to work around him, but also who he's able to bring in. And I think that won't just be other midfielders, but it'll be other forward players. He's really good at bringing other players into touch and playing to their strengths as well. You see that when he plays for the international team, and you saw that throughout the World Cup, how that side of his game is really prominent. But then I think when you see him play for Brighton more, when he is one of the best players on the pitch, you can see how he has an impact as a playmaker. And he's really impressive in the sense that he can take control of games. As Neil just mentioned, he plays really well under pressure. And one of my favourite things about him coming in is the fact that we've spoken multiple times about how these players aren't really going to have a grace period to bed in. They're not going to have loads of time. We need to start the season strong. We need to hit the ground running. We need to make sure that if we want to be back to where we want to be next season, that the start of the season is as good as it can be. And he's a player that is familiar with the Premier League, will know all the opposition, won't have to get up to pace with the league and playing in a new country and all of those things. So he can just come in and hopefully hit the ground running. And I think he's going to make a huge difference, a huge impact. And I'm excited that hopefully the first one will be through the door and then we can start to plan for the future and think about the future.
This isn't just a one season thing for me, Ian. I was excited by him when I saw him last season. He struck me as a genuine player. It's interesting that he's got these sort of 2 years behind him now where you're able to look at him making a real difference and a real contribution in the Premier League, as Harriet says, with reference to hitting the ground running. Got a good injury record. and simultaneously not tons of miles on the clock, unlike many of his peers who were around the same age. I think he's played half the number of senior appearances as Tielemans, as an example, you know, and in the end, 45 million as well, if that's what the fee is going to be, because that's where the release is. Liverpool have, I think, got a bargain on top of everything else.
Absolutely. That fee seems to have kind of come out in the last day or two, doesn't it, in terms of how low it might be compared to some of the fees that were getting thrown around. I like him as a footballer. I do think the flexibility thing's massively important. So the fact that he can play a little bit of six or eight or 10 will have massively interested Liverpool, because it makes you feel like you haven't got to do quite as much at times. If you've got footballers who can move about and do different things for you, that said, we know they have to do a fair amount of business this summer. But I also think he very much plays into the no dickhead policy. So if you hear him speak after the Manchester United game where he scores, I think he scores the winning penalty, doesn't he, at the end of the game, he just comes across like a really great fella as well. And I think that's important in terms of squad harmony and how people conduct themselves both on and off the pitch. So I think he ticks boxes there. He is someone who is up for the big moments. So Neil mentioned about, you know, playing in a Lionel Messi team there. He comes into that kind of World Cup campaign, doesn't he, after they've had a bit of a stuttering start. And the BBC showed a programme the other night about Messi and obviously going on to win the World Cup. And you realise just how big an influence McAllister is at times as well. Even in final, he's sensational. So I think Liverpool have got the hands on a really, really, really good footballer if it ends up happening, which it now looks like it will. Just on his position, I've not seen him do loads in the six. And I think I would still like Liverpool to be looking at doing a bit more, because I'd like to see maybe a more imposing figure there. If we are saying that maybe Fabinho's best days are behind him, what does that look like? I'm not sure it's McAllister on a regular basis, to be honest, but I think he offers loads elsewhere.
It's also great in terms of part of a project. Other players who we are linked with, maybe someone in that sixth position can look at it. He's already signed up and he's buying into what Liverpool wants to do moving forward. He's not fazed by the fact that we are in the Europa League next season, although admittedly he'd have been playing in that as well. And I think other players can look at that around Europe and think, okay, I can see what Liverpool are trying to do. I can see how they're building from here, how they're taking this shit seriously, because for a while it feels like we haven't taken the transfer window too seriously. And they can think, yeah, I want to be part of that as well. I want to be part of this project with this
also,
manager.
It's not too different, is it, from what Liverpool have been doing? So it doesn't feel like Liverpool have had a bad season and just gone, right, we need to get Casemiro.
It would have made sense last season.
Yeah,
exactly.
They haven't just gone and signed, like, Toni Kroos is available, so we'll just get in because we need to sort of fix this quickly. I think he's played 177 league games in his career. Liverpool, I've spoken to people at Liverpool who say all the time, 175 is the benchmark of what they look at in terms of we know what we're going to get from a player, 175 senior games. And if you look at Mane, Salah, Firmino, probably Jota, I would imagine would be in there. Gakpo won't be far off, I wouldn't imagine. He's very much in that zone. 24, perfect age, from a club where he's played at a certain style, but now he can take the next step. He's a Champions League player who's going to be playing in a Europa League team next season, but the aim is obviously to get back there. So I think he does tick an awful lot of boxes. And as Ian said about the no dickheads element, it's a great video of him taking his World Cup winners medal, wasn't around Brighton, pretty much, wasn't it? Stopping in his car and letting people, you know, there is something to be said for that. And I personally think Casado's a better player all round, but when you look at Casado putting in a transfer request in January, I wonder what sort of impact that had on the feedback that comes back to clubs. You know, there's talk that Arsenal maybe have sort of cooled their interest and gone elsewhere. I wonder whether that does factor in, that you think, I don't know, you know, is he going to do that to us somewhere down the line? Possibly. McAllister feels like he's sort of someone who you've got a reliable read on his talent and his personality.
Not only that as well, I think it's really important. I think how Brighton play, so you talk about the player, and he's flexible in terms of he can play different positions, but he's also operating a team that is really, really switched on from a technical point of view. They operate different systems. He's able to take that on board. You can tell just from how he plays the game. So I think Jürgen will have liked the fact that he's playing for Brighton in a system that is full of flexibility, and he's a massive part of that. I do think the Caicedo thing's interesting because I love him as a player. I think he's great. His performance in the semi-final against Manchester United in the FA Cup was sensational. He finishes on the losing team that day, but you know, he is someone who, if someone gets their hands on him, they're getting a hell of a footballer as well.
Just last little thing on it is, why do you think Caicedo is a better player? My only remaining concern on McAllister, as I say, I've been a big fan of his for 2 years, is in the current Liverpool setup, Neil, Ian and then Harriet, you know, my concern is just at times last season, just looked at times, certain lineups, I've looked at them, a bit too small. Mm. Certain moments, I've looked at them, not strong enough. not mentally, although that happened last season, but, you know, not physically strong enough, not big enough. And there's also a question around speed. You know, I think he's not mobile, let's be crystal clear. You know, he can certainly run a lot faster than I can these days, but it's that, you know, that idea.
It's not the benchmark.
That can't be the benchmark here. That's a really important detail. That cannot be the benchmark.
Can't even faster than that,
Kobe, that cannot be the benchmark. But we do need to up the pace in the middle of the park on top of everything else. And that's my thing is, if you just said, what do we need in the middle of the park before anything else? It's not before anything else, but bigger, quicker, faster. Sorry, bigger, quicker, stronger is what I would have said. And he's maybe none of the above.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, not being injured is probably quite high on that list.
That probably is actually number one available, of the four. Yeah,
available, and he's got a decent record, like you say, of you know, not missing games. But the one, Ian's right about the semi-final. The one I watched was the Arsenal game where Brighton took him apart, and Caicedo played right back, and I thought, wow, that's imagine Trent and him sort of just... You just look after that sort of side of the pitch. You know, I don't care where you start and who starts where. Just do that. And I looked at that and thought, wow, that's something else. I mean, I don't really want to bring the stats up because it is you get a read of what the type of player it is, but you can't judge stats on, you know, what they're being asked to do. It depends on. But Caicedo sort of ranks. He comes up in a lot of departments, whether it's dribbles, whether it's passes, whether it's touches in the game, tackles, and you know, he just looks like someone who. You can trust them to get through mountains of work. But by the same token, as Harriet said, is McAllister someone who's all of a sudden you just see a different bit of Fabinho in the game, or you see a bit of Van Dijk just able to play a bit differently, or Robertson, you know, who's just got that little... Do they bring out more? Whereas Caicedo maybe doing their work a little bit and masking them more so? So I think there's lots of reasons to be happy about McAllister, not least because... He's probably going to be the penalty taker.
Going to take the pens. There's still more to do. That's the most important thing, Harry. No one thinks this is finished. If anything, the idea of having McAllister facilitates the idea of maybe having a bit more flexibility in terms of the next two.
Yeah, I think a lot of fans probably just a bit nervous to see who the first one was and to make sure that was set in stone, because there has been transfer sagas that have dragged on and players that we've been linked to for months on end, and then that's never really come to fruition. And I think last summer... And also January as well kind of spooked us out a bit. I mean, when did we even sign Arta? That was that January?
No, that was honestly, literally,
it's literally blown my mind. Like, I don't know when everything is. And I think that situation and the fact that we haven't brought in a senior midfielder since Thiago, have we? He's the last one that we brought in on a permanent basis. Yeah. And we're probably all, a little bit kind of spooked out by that. But the fact that it is going to be, hopefully this week, set in stone, done, gives a real sense of optimism, a real sense of hope. And I think we ended last season actually with a real sense of optimism and hope, because we knew this summer was coming up. We knew that we were going to get new players through the door. And it also feels like it marks a new era. The last game, particularly the home game at Anfield, where we said goodbye to the players, it felt like the end of an old era. It felt like we were saying goodbye to really key people who have been a really key part of success. And now we're looking ahead to the future. And McAllister forms the real first part of that. And that's really exciting.
The only thing I'd say, I don't want to temper the optimism, is that it's not unlike Liverpool. They got Darwin Nunez in last summer in June, and Fabio Carvalho, Calvin Ramsey, I think, came in June. They got Gakpo in before the window had even opened. So they do this quite a bit.
But they let them it's just
about what they do after it, isn't it? And there is the danger that Liverpool go, well, we've got it, we've spent 70 million or whatever it is on a midfielder. And then it drifts, and all of a sudden you're like, I just haven't done enough. Liverpool consistently have done good business and not enough of it in windows. You've just got to hope now that whatever follows in after it is enough.
There has to be momentum from it.
I think they need two midfielders, a defender and a forward, personally, in this year that they need to get. They probably need two defenders. I think that there's a massive earthquake coming at centre back with Liverpool. I think they're in a pretty poor position in terms of the centre backs that they've got at the moment and the value of the centre backs that they've got. But this is a good start to a key window, key couple of windows.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. And I think I mentioned on the show last week, one of the managers drip feeding things in about needing to do business early. He's not letting us know. He's letting everyone that needs to know that's important in the getting them over the line know that it has to happen, and it has to happen quickly, and they have to be of the right quality. And that's what they've done. And I think, you know, Harriet's point about going and attracting a World Cup winner when you're not in the Champions League is important. He's clearly signed up to something. He's bought into the bigger picture. Yes, Liverpool are out of it now, but with me and others going there, then that should hopefully snowball. And I think just in terms of the lift it gives, not only us, but the group as well, the players, it felt like they needed a little bit of that last season. They've got it now with getting this one over the line. But Neil's right. It has to be the start of something. This can't be, and it won't be it, but it needs to be significant business.
Okay. Every year we do our season reviews at the Anfield Wrap. It gives people the opportunity to speak for a reasonable, I was about to say as long as they like, but you've got to draw a line somewhere. A reasonable length can't be filibustered. The reasonable length of time around what they thought of the campaign. First up, we'll be Ian Ryan, then we'll have Neil Jones, and then we'll have Harriet. But in between, obviously, we talk about what people say because we are reactive and we are all intrigued by each other's views. Ian Ryan, your season review of 2022-2023...
Yeah, so obviously, I mean, in terms of a season, I think it's one that you almost now just want to put in a bit of a box and forget about it to a large extent. There are some bright spots in there, but they are maybe few and far between. I think coming into this, I did two things. I went back and listened to the one I did last year, and I listened to your interview with the manager as well. So they're the two things I did coming into this. And the one I gave last year was obviously on the back of, winning two domestic trophies and coming close to getting a quadruple as well, but falling a little bit short. And I think falling a little bit short was important because I spoke on that about what it does to a team physically and mentally to go head to head with this Manchester City team over the period of time. And I think some of that plays out early on in Liverpool's campaign. And I think it plays out amongst the fans, I think it plays out for the manager, I think it plays out for the players as well. And when I listened to your interview with them as well, it was around about mid-July, wasn't it? And I think...
Around July the 11th, I think.
Yeah, so, and I think he kind of talks a little bit about not wanting to sign a midfielder. And I always wondered at the time whether that was him being absolutely genuine or was he just getting a little bit defensive because everyone was talking about midfielders and he maybe was batting down the hatches a little bit and just thinking, well, at some point I've got to like back my lads. And as Neil mentioned before, they'd already gone and spent a fair amount of money on Darwin Nunes, so maybe the money wasn't quite there to then go and do a midfielder, having been interested in Tchouaméni. But that's what I come back to, Neil, when I think about this season and how it's played out. I can't go a great deal further than thinking about the reasons why it didn't quite go as planned. And a lot of it will come down to recruitment for me. Liverpool just left themselves so, so short. It was such a poor window. It felt like a poor window at the time. And in hindsight, it's got no better. In fact, it's got worse when you look at it. And the business of doing Nunes, doing Carvalho, Calvin Ramsey and Arthur Melo is just... it's just nowhere near. It's just nowhere near. And that's how it plays out, unfortunately. And yes, they go and do a bit of business in January. And I'll talk a little bit about that because we'll talk about the negatives and stuff. And I want to finish on kind of some highs. But I think that really did hold them back in terms of being able to kick on. And I spoke before about you've got to give the players at some point a little bit of a boost. And I think the squad haven't gone so close and pushed themselves so far. They just needed that little bit of a lift. And I remember thinking going into the European Cup final, Liverpool had given so much before they got to that game against Madrid. And they have had lines on the day. The goalkeeper's man of the match, their keeper. But I remember looking at the stats and thinking, Madrid have cruised into this. They've only had to win 26 games. Their nearest challenger was Barcelona, who won 21. So there's been no pressure. They've won the league by 13 points. Liverpool aren't living in that world. They haven't lived in that world for a long time. They're living in a world where everything, and I mean everything, matters. So when they take to the pitch against Fulham, they drop points. I'm going into shows thinking, fucking hell, we're under pressure here against Crystal Palace. It's fucking game one. It's only been a game. And I'm talking in those terms. I'm thinking, you've got to go and beat Palace now because you've got Manchester United next. And over the last 5 years, history's told us you can probably only drop points in maybe 8 games, maybe 10 if you're cruising. So City dropped points in 10 games last season, but they're in cruise control by the end of it. When Liverpool win the league, I think they win 32 in 1920. They win 32 games, and that gets them to 99 points. And you are now going into every season thinking Man City can get to 100. So you've got it. You're in that mindset. Players are in that mindset. Managers are in that mindset. We're in that mindset. So if you draw or drop points in the first 3 games, there's a big fucking hell. We're up against it now. And I think that plays into a lot of what you then see. And at times I've questioned whether certain players have been physically tired, mentally tired, maybe a combination of both. Also, maybe just wanting one or two to come into the squad to give them a little bit of a lift. You see that that happens when someone like a Diaz comes into the squad, someone like a Gakpo comes into the squad this season. Everyone, we all get a little bit of a lift. So I think there's quite a lot of that. Now, if I want to be fair to the manager a little bit, and I say the manager because, listen, he can only do what he can do. And he can only do what he can do if the money's there. And at times, I'm on record as saying, I think this ownership group have left him a little bit high and dry at times. I think they could have and should have pushed the boat out at different times to help him in certain situations. But I think the manager's massively caught on the hop with Fabinho. I don't think he sees the drop-off. I don't think anyone sees the drop-off to the extent it comes. It is huge. It is significant. It has a real impact because prior to that, you know, he goes back a couple of seasons and he is operating as one of the best number sixes in world football, I would suggest. He looks a very different player as the season starts from that. And maybe there are one or two signs going into the end of the previous season with form, but it's not to the extent that suddenly kind of ends up playing out. And I think Henderson does him a little bit as well, because I think when they're going for the four trophies, I think Henderson's really poor in the first part of that game, first part of that campaign, I should say, with some exceptions against Everton away, Old Trafford, he's sensational. There are those games where he's really good, but I think he's poor in the first part. But I think he finds himself going into the back end of that campaign, and that maybe makes the manager think, could I run them one more time? Have they got one more in them where we can maybe get to January and look at it again? It doesn't play out that way. And for me, it was never going to play out that way. But if you want to be kind, maybe that's where they were thinking, could they just go again? So there's all of that going on, but it makes out for, you know, a really difficult campaign for Liverpool. But no, there are some bright spots in there, certainly towards maybe the second half when you see Bajcetic come in. And I think he's a lad who, yes, he'll come in and make some mistakes because of his age, and that's all part of the learning curve and stuff, but he plays without fear. And he came along at the right time because he gave Liverpool something to get behind when they needed something to get behind. And I think, you know, we watch with interest how his career develops, but I think he will, or he certainly has got a very high ceiling. So let's see where that one goes. I think Gakpo came in within 3 or 4 weeks. It all made sense. You can see why he wants to knit it all together. Really clever footballer. I think he could be fantastic for this team and this squad moving forward. And then there's the Trent stuff as well, where I think the last, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11 games, he looks like he's enjoying his football again. And that's massively important to Liverpool, because if you want to talk about players who are instrumental and influential, he is at the forefront of that. On the ball, he is unbelievable. He's got very few who can get near him in terms of ability. But I do think there was that period early in the season where, and it may be a physical thing, it may be a mental thing, it could be lots of different things, but lots of them looked fed up, and he was in that group. He was part of that. Van Dijk was part of it. They weren't doing enough. You weren't seeing enough from them. Lads who'd gone to the World Foyer on a number of times, lifted the biggest trophies, but they weren't at it. And as I say, could be some mitigation around that, but they just weren't at it. But he looks like he's really enjoying what he's doing now. And I think Liverpool should be persevering with that. Because I think if you get it right, and there will be times it gets exposed, because, you know, teams will figure some of it out, and there'll be certain days where maybe you've got to take a punch on the nose or two. But I think if they can get it right more often than not, that's a massive weapon to have.
All right, just a couple of things. One of the things that sort of, when you go back to the early part of the season, because I think it is the early part of the season that knackers them in a number of ways around belief. One of the things that hit me when I was thinking about my version of all of this was that you want to sort of think about it as a year in transition. So you think about that Palace home game, and it's a really odd thing where effectively Diaz, Nunez, Elliot and Phillips start, and I'm saying that none of them have played for a Liverpool team that's won more than 20 games by that point. Maybe Diaz is there or thereabouts, but it's new and it's different, and Nunez is different, and the way in which they're going to press is different, the way Diaz presses is different to Mane, and Elliot in there and Phillips in there. But it's a bit like, it's transitional, but the people who are part of the transition, as it's going to be, aren't really there or thereabouts. Milner also starts that one next to Elliot. You're not transitioning to Milner, you're transitioning from Milner. And Milner's not been played centre mid in a Liverpool team that's won 20 games in the previous season, because he didn't play centre mid that much in the previous season. He does do a few bits. And that's always been the sort of bit that sort of strikes me, is that you feel like you're going toe-to-toe with the biggest behemoth football's ever seen on the one hand, and then you're not in the pro, and you feel like you're in transition on the other, but what you're actually in transition from and to have just become really muddy. Do you see what I mean? And is that part of what you think happened,
yeah,
basically?
And I think you mentioned that, didn't you? I think you mentioned that a lot. Like, what are they transitioning from and to as the season started to kind of unravel? But before the season started, I don't know, maybe, listen, sometimes you misremember things, but I don't really remember anyone really talking about transition too much before the season. And there was obviously kind of changes and stuff, but I didn't hear that phrase mentioned loads. It felt to me like Liverpool just had left themselves massively short with midfield. And then you get into the realms of transition because you can suddenly see all these issues and all these things are coming to light that maybe people weren't thinking they'd come to light as much. Now, I felt they'd struggle to get anywhere near maybe Manchester City when you realise the business they've done. But I still don't think you're thinking they're going to fall outside the top four. So I think where it becomes a bit frustrating is that there still should have been enough within that group to get themselves into a position where they're in the top four. But I think part of it unravelling and the mental thing, it takes hold of some of them to the point where they're like, well, fucking hell, how do we sort this now? It's too late, it's gone. Because the primary aim was to win the league and the primary aim was to win the European Cup. And once that's apparent it's not going to happen, then I think it all just falls around them a little bit. And that's how it plays out.
I think one thing you said right at the start, which I found interesting, was what it does for them mentally off the back of Man City and off the back of the season where they were going for all four and then they did fall short. What I'm kind of interested in is how much you think that led directly to the drop-off that you did experience with some of the key players that you mentioned there, Fabinho, Henderson. Like, how much of that do you think was mental and how much can you attribute to physical fatigue and the fact that they've been run into the ground? Because for me, a lot of the times you were watching the players and you could really see that mentally they were struggling. They didn't feel like they had confidence. They didn't feel like they were on the top of their game. They didn't feel like they had that belief in themselves. But then that was kind of combined with the lack of legs. But how much can you attribute to the mental and the physical?
I think it's odd. I think only they will know themselves, you know, when they look in the mirror and they think, well, you know, if I put everything in a could today, you know, is it a mental thing? Is it a physical thing? I think it'll be them who have to answer that. What I would say from the outside looking in, I think there were times where you could see it was a bit of both, I think, for certain players, but it seemed to be that way. But then I do think there was almost a bit of, we're a bit fed up here. And I think you maybe saw it in one or two of Trent's performances where he just didn't look like he was happy with what was going on around him. And maybe he felt like he was being hung out to dry a little bit. That said, I do think there were times when he could have got himself back into certain situations. But I also think, and you get a little bit of this from Van Dijk, but one or two others as well, they wanted help. They wanted people to come in. And I think if you're a good player, you always back yourself and you want more good players to come in. And I just think there was almost a sense of, fucking hell, we've gone so far, so close. We just need a little bit of help here. I could not believe they did not do midfielders. And I felt they had to do two in the summer, let alone none. I mean, I know Melo comes in, but, you know, his kind of impact is just, it's non-existent.
13 minutes.
What a 13 minutes it was. I mean, it beggars belief. And don't get me wrong, you go into the season and you convince yourself of maybe certain things because you want to show a little bit of bravado and stuff. But being really honest about it, when you realise what they've done in the window is those four, you felt they were going to be a mile off.
What about the size of pre-season? I remember coming to Leicester in July for the Community Shield and just thinking, this is not right. This shouldn't be happening. This is too short. I think the first league game is the 5th of August at Fulham. It felt like if that was going to be an issue, burnout, mental fatigue, it was going to be an issue this year as well. When you've got the World Cup coming up, you've got a sort of a two-part season. Do you think Liverpool sort of tried to split it into that and think, do you know what, just let's stick with what we know for the first half of the season. We can rely on these lads to sort of just go through it and then we'll really try and kick on after it. Do you think they sort of anticipated that maybe everyone would have these kind of issues?
Yeah, maybe. I remember looking at the pre-season. I think by the time Liverpool get to the Charity Shield, I think they've played 4 games by then, the Charity Shield being the 5th one, and then there's one that comes after it as well. But I remember thinking at the time,
Canate gets injured in the day after.
Yeah. I remember thinking at the time,
Strasbourg?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah. And they'd done a little bit of, I think they played United, hadn't they? They played Palace. And I remember looking at cities and thinking, they've played no one.
One game.
They've played no one. So I said on the show last week, I think Liverpool got some of that wrong in terms of the balance of pre-season. But maybe it was a difficult one to get right, given that we knew there was a World Cup coming in the middle. So I don't know. But it felt like Liverpool were doing a lot more than anyone else. I remember thinking at the time, Liverpool are playing a lot more games than the kind of rivals here. And in the Charity Shield, you think, fucking hell, that's paid off, because they look right at it. They were now 3-1 winners and they look like they're ready to take a season on. You have to say that. And I know it's a friendly and it's totally different when you get into the kind of nuts and bolts of it all, but it looked like they were ready to get stuck in.
It was a really competitive game.
And I think, yeah, City, but they took it seriously as well. You could see it on the day, but, you know, it doesn't play out that way. And I just think sometimes, I remember Josh asking me about early July, because I remember I was going to go away and he said, you know, what are you thinking about next season prediction-wise? And at that time, the window had only been open 2 or 3 weeks. I'm thinking, well, yeah, Liverpool, I'm banging to Liverpool going again here. They'll push them all away. But you come, but they don't do any business, so they don't do enough business, and that's where you come back to. They had to help more. They had to help them out. They had to help the squad and the group out a little bit more. And I'll always come back to that. Once you leave yourselves that short, the rest of it felt very uphill.
Okay. Season review from Neil Jones.
Yeah, so I thought the theme I'd go on is the year Liverpool lost their certainty and their nerve in a lot of it. I look back on last season, 2021-22, and I don't think Liverpool were great up until the turn of the year, but what they had was certainty, and they had people who could break open the game for them, and they didn't have two of the key ones, I think. This season, they didn't have Jota from pre-season. They didn't have Mane, who'd obviously left. And what they were waiting for were people to come and fill that void. And I'm completely of the opinion that if they beat Fulham on the opening day of the season, I think it's a very different season. And I think as soon as they didn't beat Fulham, they hit the bar in the last minute. Just Henderson, it's one from 30 yards. It's the bar. I think Diaz, it's the post in the first half. I think Liverpool lost their nerve. I genuinely think they went into that home game against Palace thinking, we've got to win this game. We've got to win it. And they go 1-0 down. I mean, inexplicably, Nat Phillips is playing centre-back. Joe Gomez is on the bench. I think Elliot Milner, you mentioned in midfield. Jordan Henderson's on the bench because Jürgen says he can't do the start. They can't start the game.
There was a lot of that first half of the season.
The first three games, three different centre-half partnerships. I think Gomez plays at Old Trafford. Matip plays at Fulham. I think from that Charity Shield, Community Shield, I think Curtis Jones goes, Konate goes on the Monday, Thiago goes on the Saturday, and Nunes gets sent off in the Palace game, and all of a sudden you're going into United with this sort of bizarre sort of the sort of team you'd be putting out when you're trying to stretch your resources between four different competitions in April and May. I think Liverpool completely lost their bottle, or not, bottle's a terrible word, nerve. They lost sight of who they were, and that it would all be okay, and they started chasing results, and they started chasing games, and they started chasing things, and what happened was a knock-on effect, was by chasing, they were 1-0 down before they'd even sort of got out of bed in a lot of games, and it became this sort of thing. It was actually a thing towards the back end of last season. They were 1-0 down in games, but they always knew. I always knew. I don't know about you, when they were 1-0 down against Villa at the back end of last season, when they were 1-0 down against Southampton, I knew they'd win. I knew they'd win 2-1. I sort of knew, you sort of half knew who'd score. You knew they'd get one from the corner or a set piece, one of the centre-backs would score, and then they'd nick one through Mane or Salah. And they never had that. They never had that. They all of a sudden, all the sort of flaws in the squad or all the imperfections in the squad, Diaz being a little bit of an individual, Nunes being a bit raw and a bit, you know, hard to read. Salah being a player who doesn't do a lot in games, but suddenly pops up with a goal. But all of a sudden, it was that he wasn't doing a lot in games, was standing out. Fabinho, even at his best, being a bit wooden. Jordan being a bit, puts the ball up in the air a bit too much. They all sort of started to stand out. And there was no sort of certainty to anything that they were doing. It was all a little bit like, Maybe the certainty came from what they were saying. They were saying, "Let's be okay. Like, look, we'll play our way through it." But I think they'd lost their belief in that. And I actually think there's a huge deal of credit that comes from Liverpool from the way they ended the season, because they played Chelsea at the end of January. I think it was 9th v 10th or 10th v 11th. And when walking off that at the end of that game, if you'd have said to me one of these teams will finish 5th and one of them will finish 12th. I know who I'd have picked. I'd have put my money on Liverpool being the ones who finished 12th, because they looked absolutely bereft of anything. Chelsea at least had a sub who came on in Mudrick who looked like he was dangerous. The fact that Liverpool gathered themselves, and I do think one thing that they did gather back was that certainty and that surety that it's okay, we're 1-0 down. it's fine. Or it's okay, Canate's give a goal away at Ellen Road, it's 2-1. We're not going to let this slip. We'll just get it back together and we'll go and batter them. We have a dodgy start at Leicester, nowhere near sort of confident in the way they play, but these are rubbish, we'll beat them. That kind of surety. And I honestly think that first 90 minutes of the season set the tone for the entire thing. One, that there was an injury to a key player in Thiago. There was near misses. There was a bit of a discord in attack that you thought, I don't know, sure how these pieces fit together. There's something still to be worked on there. But mainly, we don't believe that we can sort of do all the things that we always do. And one of those things would be, as Ian said, 90 plus points. We just can't do it again this season. We can't. It's not possible. And that was set, I think, in August.
My first thing on what you say, because I agree on the loss of nerve. I think it's there and it's there early. And I think it's on the pitch and I think it's off the pitch. And I think there's also a supporter thing in that a little bit as well. Possibly. Not nerves, not quite the right thing there, but almost stomach. You know, I feel as though there's a couple. On a couple of these shows when we've done them, I've, like, for instance, cited the fact that Anfield barely greets the goal that makes it 3-2 against Brighton when we've been 2-0 down. Like, Anfield just sort of goes, oh, that's gone in, has it? Rather than celebrate it like we're back from trouble. But I think there's something else. I agree with you on the loss of nerve, but I think something else happens, which is they really, and I don't think it just happens to us. I think it happens a little bit to City in the first part of the season as well, which is they really give the opposition reason to have belief. I think that goes both ways. I think everyone goes, they see the game against Fulham and go, aye, aye. And then they see the game against Palace and go, that there's a big arrow hanging here all of a sudden. And I think, but I think in general as well, maybe opposition sides were going to, at least in the first part of the season, have a bit more of a go at Liverpool and City. The way the Champions League games fall as well meant that, you know, there was a stretch on resources. But I think that's the big thing. Opposition sides begin to go, we can have these here. They've got a real plan for it as well. It's not just on the day. I think they're turning up with, we know how we're going to beat them.
Yeah, I think so. I think Fulham's a good example of that in terms of what I remember coming away from that Fulham game and thinking, Liverpool got rattled by Fulham, like, as in physically. Yeah. Palhinha and Harrison Reed just went, bang, we're gonna knock yous over and win the ball off you. United, I think, definitely done that in the first part. I think Palace is a bit different. I think Palace just got a bit lucky, I think, in terms of it was just like they rode the storm and then scored.
But the thing is, it made everyone believe there was a way.
Absolutely. And I do think the manner, a lot of goals coming from similar areas of the pitch, you know, the Trent sort of right side, the centre-back, and probably just feed into the fact that it was three different centre-backs playing in that position in the first three games of the season, and probably not the one you want either. The one that you would have wanted was injured. So it definitely did. I think if you want to factor in Van Dijk maybe losing a bit of his sheen, you know, there were moments where Mitrovic gave him a terrible chasing at times in the first game, and that's another one, you know, being unafraid to have a go. I think maybe it does come from Liverpool being right in there, playing every single game, every single sort of competition. That what does it mean? It focuses every single mind on Liverpool, doesn't it? It crystallises them as being, right, well, you know, if you want to finish second in the league, you've got to get past them. You've got to knock them off the pitch. Never mind City. And it's easy to forget. I don't think City got 90 points this season. Did they get 89?
89. Yeah. You feel like if they'd have needed to, yeah, for instance. But yeah.
But I do think there was a preoccupation with Liverpool of, we've got to get over 90 points. We've got to do this. They had to get 90 points if they wanted to win the league. But I think, how many times did you hear in the first half of the season? I met a lot of people saying, trust Liverpool to have the season they're having here, while City are rubbish as well. You know, like, all of a sudden, look, Arsenal are going to win the league. That was how people felt. Oh, Arsenal are going to win it. They're not even going to have to get that many points to do it. It turns out they didn't, and then they collapsed. But I do think there was a sort of an obsession with Liverpool.
After 14 games, City only had 32 points.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there was moments where Liverpool sort of got themselves back into it, and you started looking and saying, well, do you know what, they're not that far off. Sort of October time, they're not that far off. They probably won't, but they could if they put a run together. I think Liverpool felt sorry for themselves, I do, in the early part of the season. I think they started, and the manager came into it. I think he almost, maybe there was an element of, oh God, like Ian said on his part, was, I've trusted you to do it one more year, and look what you said. Like, you know, get out of my sight. Almost, you know, there was a little bit of that, I think, where you just started to see, away performances. I think that's a great barometer of a team's sort of fortitude and how it's feeling about itself. How do you play away from home when it's not? And Liverpool's away form for seasons has been fantastic. Absolutely. You know, I don't think I've ever been to a game in the last 5 years, 4 years away from home where I thought, I don't think Liverpool can win today. They went to City when it was the 2-2 game in the title. And if you just said to me Liverpool win that 4-1, I'd have said, I believe that. I believe they can do that. This season I went to Forest and I knew they'd lose. I went to Bournemouth. I didn't go to Bournemouth. I watched Bournemouth and I didn't think they'd win. I wouldn't say I thought they'd lose, but I didn't think they'd win after that. And there was a few too many of those in the early part of the season. I don't think anyone backed them to win at Arsenal early in the season. I think a lot of people thought, no chance. I think people looked at United and thought, oh God, that's a tough one early in the season. And that, I think that reflects where Liverpool were at mentally and psychologically.
Yeah, you mentioned injuries to key players and the name you said at the forefront was Jota. Do you think he was the biggest loss amid all the injuries that did rack up throughout the season?
Jota and Konate, I would say. I think Jota, what his underrated quality was, and it obviously lost it, is just getting you going in a game, just getting you the goal when you're not
game-breaking
playing well.
Goals.
Yeah, I mean, look, you look at the start of the previous season, so Norwich away. I went to that game. Liverpool went great. Liverpool went in half-time with a 6 out of 10 performance, but the winning 1-0 Jota scored. Liverpool Burnley, first home game, 6 out of 10 performance first half, 1-0 Jota. So many games. City away, I've mentioned that April game, battered. First half, 1-1 Jota got the equaliser. He just has that capability. More so, actually, I would say than even Salah. I mean, yeah. in the thing, you know, Salah scores so many goals, but I think Salah sort of benefits from the team, or when the team is playing really well, I think you're more likely to get a Salah. I think almost Jota's almost the opposite. It's almost like, well, when the team's free flowing, they sort of bypass Jota. When the team's struggling, there he is with a little dart and run or a set piece goal or things like that. And we saw it towards the back end of the season, didn't we? You know, I think he got 7 in his last 9. I think
he started
getting into it. And I really feel like if he'd have been, I'm not saying he would have won the league or they would have been up there, but I just think so many games in that early part of the season where you think, oh, he would have been ideal to have.
Neil, what do you think changes then when you talk about there's a lack of certainty and a lack of surety? What does change for them? Is it it's almost like a bit of a switch, isn't it? Yeah. It's flipped and then they go into this, you know, Neil was calling it the big 9, but they go into those last 11 games and they remain unbeaten. What changed, do you think?
I think there's probably a little bit of the cliff edge, the look of like, they're out the Champions League, we're gonna miss out on the top 4. Like, this is gonna be a sort of horrendous season. Like, you know, we're gonna finish 8th or 9th in the league, and that's us. That's our careers. Some of us, you know, like that's sort of, we're all on the chopping block. And I also think there's some poor teams in the Premier League this season, a lot actually, which it helped that Liverpool got a few of those teams in that run. There was a look at that last 9 fixtures that you did. If you'd have been in the title race at that point, I think you'd have been looking at that saying, that's 9 wins, isn't it? I think, is it 11 unbeaten at the end of the season?
Yeah.
You're looking at that. I think there was a look at that the fixtures all of a sudden just felt a little, they had that period of City, Chelsea, Arsenal, wasn't it, in the space of a week after Real Madrid, wasn't it? I think.
After the international break.
Yeah. So Real Madrid, no game, international break, and then those three. So I think the fixtures helped. But I also think Liverpool went to sort of people that they knew sort of more what they were getting out of them. So I think Jota being an example, that he come in and played a lot of games. Curtis Jones played all of them, I think, those last 11 games.
He plays Arsenal onwards, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, he, having his sort of reliability in terms of possession and physicality, so you see Harvey Elliott drops out of the picture a lot, doesn't he? You see, Carvalho doesn't get a look in. Darwin ends up sort of marginalised and playing off the bench. I think the fact that they got a consistency of selection and sort of an understanding that they knew what they were going to get from players, and just I do think there was that element of like, it can't get much worse. You know, I mean, a lot of people will look at that City, they got beat 4-1. I look at that Chelsea game at Stamford Bridge. I come away almost heartbroken at what Liverpool were. This was Chelsea.
It looked like two mid-table teams.
It just looked like two teams that were finished for the season. They'd clocked off, and you were looking at that thinking, oh, wow. And Chelsea were the better of the two by a distance as well. So I do think there was probably an element of this cannot go on. You know, like we're going to have to sort of completely sort of change our mindset. And then you look at the fixtures and go, that's all right. Nottingham Forest, Leeds, Leicester, you know, teams like that. We'll get something out of these games no matter how we're sort of playing. But once you get a couple of wins under the belt, I do think it does make a big difference to the way you view yourself a little bit. And I still don't think Liverpool looked themselves towards the back. I mean, they left four in on the last day of the season against Southampton. You know, they were, a lot of those games that they won towards the back end were in the balance. But in a strange sort of way, does it maybe give you a little bit more sort of confidence that, you know, we didn't just go and blow teams away and give this false sense of, oh yeah, we're back. You know, we've seen that this season with Rangers and Bournemouth and Man United where you have a big win. Maybe you sometimes learn a little bit more when it was a tough one and you had to grind it out.
Okay, coming up now, we've got Martin Mazur, who spoke to Fouad Hassan about Alexis McAllister that is coming. And then after then, we will have Harry Pryor's season review in order to round us all off. So here we go.
I think he's one of the gifted, of the few special players that are, yes, their destiny is to be even bigger players. And he showed that in the World Cup. I mean, that was fantastic, fantastic. That was really surprising. Because I was there in Qatar, and sometimes from the stands, the vision is not always perfect. But there are, well, like these mini moments in which you thought that was Messi, right? No, that was McAllister. So, you know, that kind of confusion, which is a fantastic confusion, that was McAllister playing. The World Cup final, it's like to frame it, you know, it's like he played fantastically well. Fantastic. He also was part of the amazing goal of Di Maria, but he played so well, so sure of everything that he had to do, so talented. So it's clear that he doesn't feel the pressure because he had always performed as someone that had 100 caps, and he had only played like four or five, if I remember correctly, before. I think Argentina wouldn't have made it without McAllister and without Enzo Fernandez.
Okay. Coming up later on this week, the Red Archive and Space Liverpool present The Story of Paris. It is an ongoing exhibition of what happened in Paris, the story, the full day, not just the bits that were deeply unpleasant. But speaking about that, there will be a panel event. It's Emma Case, who is behind it, with the good people at Liquid as well, 41 Stanhope Street. I'll be chairing the panel, I suppose. They won't need much chairing because it's Ted Morris, Joe Blott and Dan Austin. Maybe a couple of other people joining as well. They will very much get on with it themselves. I will just sit there and admire as it wears on. But that is happening on Thursday night this week, if you are around. That is happening on Thursday night. Do check out all the shows that are coming out. We mentioned Martin Mazur there just a few seconds ago. Other people as well. All fantastic stuff. And there was great stuff last week. Download the app and so on and so forth. Everything that you need on the Anfield app. Okay. Harry Pryor. With notes that some have described as extensive, is going to give us her season review in any way that she sees fit.
Do you know what? I started writing and it just all flowed out, so I just kept writing, but I won't go through the extensive notes. Maybe I'll post it on Twitter so people can see the full version. But I'm going to start with a quote, which I feel like is a bit philosophical, but I was away at the weekend and it gave me a bit of time to reflect. And someone actually said, unhappiness comes from not fulfilling your own expectations. And I found that really interesting in relation to Liverpool season, because so much of what I found disappointing or have been upset by this season has purely come by the fact we've not lived up to expectations, but it's happened in kind of stages. So Neil mentioned the opening day, and you go into that thinking, okay, if Liverpool are going to go on and win the league, which is what we all thought at the time we were going to challenge for, they're going to have to get 90 plus points. And then you lose that hope because they draw, they come away from it, and you're tempering expectations already of, okay, maybe that's not feasible. Then the Palace result comes. And then I feel like there's another stage of that where you're thinking the expectation is top four. So you go into the next phase of the season where you've kind of let the title race go, you've settled with that, you've made your peace with that, and then results continue not to go our way. And I think for me, the biggest one was the Bournemouth game, where you go into and you get that result and you come away from that with the emphatic win. And then the Newcastle winner was actually the game after that. People think it kind of went bad straight after Bournemouth, but there was the late Newcastle winner, which was another moment of real high. But then after that, it starts to just trail off a little bit again. And I think when you go into a season where Klopp has said, you know, book your flights to Paris or wherever it was going to be, the final, he did say that, didn't he?
Istanbul
it was going to be at the time. And then you feel like nothing is going your way. You just gradually let the disappointment creep in. And it was actually, I felt like that up until the World Cup. And then the World Cup, I felt like was going to be a new start. And it felt like we needed a break. Everyone just needed to go away. Everyone needed to go and do their own thing, settle a little bit, get out of their own heads. But I think actually for a number of players, the World Cup didn't help. Trent, for example, it really didn't help. It didn't give him any renewed sense of confidence. He was sat on the bench for the entirety of it. Some of them got rest, yes, but it didn't feel like any of them came back particularly physically or mentally in a better place. And that is reflected in the results. And it takes me personally up until February to find peace with the highs and lows of the season. And I think from that point, I actually was able to really enjoy certain games and certain moments without thinking they were going to lead to anything bigger or they were going to form part of a bigger picture that was getting top four or getting a title race. So the biggest example for me is that for that is when we beat United 7-0 and the highs of that and how incredible that felt. And knowing that maybe that wasn't going to be part of how we're going to win a title, how we're going to get top four, but you can just enjoy it for what it is. And then straight after that comes the disappointment of losing to Bournemouth and you take the lows of that as well. So just going through the motions of feeling that. And I think then I was able to really enjoy it. And actually I did enjoy huge parts of the season. For me, the real high point was beating City at home, and that wasn't in a particularly good period, but that goal for me was definitely like a moment of the season. Man United, obviously, and there was real highs in that. And then there was real lows as well. I remember actually Napoli, where we watched it in, where did we watch it? In
the Red
Lion. And
I'm not linking the Red Lion to Liverpool's disappointment this season and yet.
I know. And I remember looking around as Napoli just kind of was scoring and kept scoring. And no one felt like it was a shock. And everyone's faces just kind of reflected the fact that this was inevitable, that we weren't going to get a result against top teams. And that was really hard to take in, because I think Ben Jono was there, Rob Gutman was there, and they all just looked like kind of not even sad, but just like they'd accepted the fate of it. And I think that's what made me kind of the most disappointed. And then the way we end the season has filled me with a sense of hope and a sense of optimism moving into the future. And I did, because we were talking about next season, what we're going to do. I did a kind of like five things that we learn, and I was going to reflect on that from the season point of view. And the first one that I said is that, you know, Trent can play in midfield, and for literally years now, even down to when he played for about 30 minutes for England, he did a cameo in midfield. People are questioning whether that would work, whether he was able to play in that position, whether it would benefit us. I think we've come away from the season really having confirmed that that can work and that will work. I think I came away as well, the second thing, that we have talent in abundance for the future. I think Bajcetic was the biggest example of that for me. He comes through that period of games where everyone isn't performing well and he is the shining light. He is the one that can carry a team that doesn't feel like it's dealing with pressure well, and he deals with it really well. The third is that Alisson is a total game changer, and he's always been there and he changed everything when he came in, but he's never had to really have the spotlight. But this season he gets the spotlight in all the right moments, and we end up in the Europa League, I think, because of him. The fourth is the Gakpo signing and how key that was, and I think how key that's going to be, and we'll only know maybe towards the end of next season how important that will be as a signing. But for me, that was a really key moment. And then the fifth one was that Salah is just ridiculously consistent, and regardless of whether there's games where he's not in form or there's periods of the season where he doesn't feel like he's performing to his level, he is still coming away from it having scored another 30 goal season, and it's just ridiculous the form that he's able to go on. So I feel this sense of real optimism, even though, you know, on the final day we sat and I said, I just feel weird that the season has ended and we're not going to a final and we're not looking forward to anything. We're just playing on the final day with nothing left to play for, and it feels really final and really strange. And I do feel, yeah, the sense of optimism. But for me, that theme of the season has been consistently falling short of the new expectations and coming to terms with that again. So it's the title race, the top four, and then it's Europa League and whether you're even going to get that. And we do get that in the end. Like you mentioned, probably if someone said to you when we were in that ninth or tenth spot, and they said we were going to finish up in those spots, you wouldn't have expected it. So it's been a wild journey full of highs and lows, and I think I just had to learn to accept the highs and lows and enjoy them as they came.
Just on, firstly, you accepted them, but also maybe the collective accepted them. For me, I think one of the most important things to take from the season around expectations and the management of that, and what I mean by that isn't sort of about almost on a personal level. Like, I just sort of feel as though people found a way for things to cease to be enjoyable. And I think that's internal in Liverpool as well. I think that happened to the players, and I think that happened to us. And I don't think that happens. I don't think that's as simple as, and you can draw a line at Paris, or you can draw a line here, or you can draw a line here. Like, my two favourite games from the calendar year of 2022, I think, are the two games against City at neutral venues. So the FA Cup semi-final, because I still wasn't that bothered whether or not we won the FA Cup, and it's not the same as the league and the Champions League, but you got to see two really good teams go at it, and you got like a feast of football, and I love the Community Shield.
That's interesting, because I remember at the back end of last season going to that semi-final and saying, this is the last game of the season that doesn't matter.
Yeah,
and someone said to me, well, it's an FA Cup semi-final. I said, no, but doesn't matter, does it? We'll swap that for, I think, did they play with the Etihad?
Yeah, beating City the Etihad. Sorry, it'd been the week before.
The week before, yeah. And that is a good point. That's where Liverpool got to. Liverpool got to where an FA Cup semi-final was the least important game of 20 in a row or whatever.
I went away that weekend. I just went on hold. I didn't go the game. That's the other thing everyone talks about, how special that Wembley thing was. I loved it, but I wasn't there. We went away that weekend because I needed to get a holiday and somewhere, and none of the others were possible. But on that then, for you, but also for everyone, maybe into it. Like, I just think the way we get back to where we want to get to is by enjoying it game by game. And ultimately next season, I want to try to only think about City twice when we're playing them.
You saw that. I think you saw that internally and externally. So I'll deal with the internally first, and the fact that the players clearly couldn't take it game by game because they were letting what had come before and the negative performances and negative results and even negative season and the way the last season ended really play on their minds, and that impacted performances. And I think you can look at players, and I don't want to dig anyone out, but particularly someone like Trent, you could see clear as day how much negative performances, negative media, negative comments were impacting his performances. And internally, there was a struggle to take it game by game. But then I can understand that, because that's exactly how I felt, and exactly, I think, how a lot of fans felt from an external perspective, was that a lot of the games just felt a bit dead and a bit insignificant because they weren't building up to a bigger picture. And sometimes when you felt like they were building up to a bigger picture, you'd be disappointed in the one that followed. And that, like I mentioned in the review earlier, the United to Bournemouth was the biggest example of that. That was kind of a microcosm of how I felt about a lot of the season. You couldn't get that momentum going and that positive mental attitude because there was a dip so quickly after. But then when I felt I was able to take it game by game, I enjoyed it a lot more. And I think when the players felt like there wasn't as much pressure to achieve what, you know, top four in the end, they didn't feel like they had to worry as much about what had been, and they could take it game by game more and enjoy it more. And you saw that in their performances, and that really translated to them just playing better and playing more freely and playing with a sense of identity and a sense of actually just trying to go for it, pressing more, trying harder, going at it, like you said. And I think, that's how the season plays out internally for the players and externally for us as fans.
Ian?
You spoke before about some of the optimism you have for the season to come. And one of the things you mentioned was Trent in midfield. Is that something you see them persevering with more often than not? Do you see them kind of playing that hybrid role pretty much on a kind of week-to-week basis? Or do you think they'll pick and choose when he does it?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one, because for me, that was the point that the season transformed in terms of we were started to win games, we started to feel more creative, and it felt like there were certain games where you'd say, okay, Klopp's definitely going to pull it back to him just being more of a right back, and then he didn't really do that. But I don't think during that spell, correct me if I'm wrong, we played anyone that was like an Arsenal or a City or someone that was really in that kind of top caliber of level where they had the attacking talent that was just going to constantly come at us. So I think there will be a level next season of tapering it to who we're playing, adjusting it towards the opposition, whether he does stay back a little bit more, whether he does commit more. But it also for me was interesting because there was games where Trent would play really high, but Robertson would hang back. And I think towards the end of the season, Robertson was actually pushing really far forward as well, and it just left us a bit overexposed. So I think if we are going to stick with it and persevere, there needs to be a tactical shift across the board that is worked on over pre-season, that is absolutely honed, that's worked on with the new midfielders coming in. But for me, I'd like to see him stay in a more hybrid role, stay where he has that more flexibility, where he's able to play in the middle of the park, have that vision from the middle of the park, play crosses from wherever he wants to. And so, for me, it's something that should 100% stay for next season and beyond.
Neil?
When did your optimism go for the season? When how quick did it go? I mean, so I think some people's went before the ball had been kicked. I think some people went going to the Fulham game. We're sort of waiting for something to go wrong. But when did you sort of think, oh, this isn't looking good, this?
I was actually at a wedding at the Fulham game, and someone organised their wedding on the first day of the season. Can you believe it? So I was kind of watching, well, trying to watch, and that felt like a huge blow, didn't it, for everyone? Because it should have been a new start and it should have been a fresh start. And a lot of people were saying, look, Liverpool are going to respond really well to this, because traditionally they had responded well to setbacks and adversity. So a lot of optimism did go that early on, 100%. But for me, I was trying to kind of carry it through. But then there was that run of games where it was impossible to feel like Liverpool were going to achieve anything this season. And so for me, it was that kind of like September, October period where things really went bad, where I was like, the Leeds loss at home was my low point of the season, 1,000,000%. I felt in the ground that day, it was horrible to be there. That was my low point. And then after that, I tried to build a bit more optimism mentally just for myself. But that, yeah, I think the first day leading into the couple of months afterwards, definitely.
Okay, thank you very much for the Anfield Wrap this week. Andy producing, Ash as well, Neil, Harriet and Ian going through that season for us almost one last time. See you later. Sports Social Podcast Network.